Chapter 4, The Apology. "Why can't we give that boy regular old cookies from the supermarket?" said Skye, poking at a bowl of batter with a wooden spoon. She and Rosalind were in the kitchen making cookies for Jeffrey. Jane had left a few minutes earlier for Arendelle Hall to deliver the apology, soothe Jeffrey's wounded feelings, and try to bring him back to the cottage for an apology party. "Don't attack the batter. Stir the way Mommy taught us," said Rosalind. "I don't remember anything about stirring. I remember Mommy singing that song about all the little chocolate chips going to cookie heaven, and I remember putting batter in Jane's hair." Rosalind took the bowl and spoon and demonstrated how to stir and then handed them back. "You know Jane's going to mess it all up. Jeffrey will get more upset and hate all of us instead of just me. This cookie thing is a waste of time," said Skye, with an only slightly improved stirring method. "Jane'll do fine." "Even if she does, he won't accept the apology. Why should he? I wouldn't if someone said that kind of stuff about Daddy." "Nobody would say anything bad about Daddy," said Rosalind, then looked out the window to see why Hound was barking. It was Cagney pulling up in the pickup truck. "What do you think Cagney's doing here? He's got a big bush in a truck." "It must be the rescued Rose. Cagney scores 1, Miss Tifton 0. I'll see if he needs any help with it." Rosalind took off her apron and smoothed back her hair. "Rosalind, wait. Don't leave me here alone. I don't know what to do next." "Use a teaspoon to drop the batter onto the cookie sheet, and then put them in the oven. Don't panic, I'll be back in a few minutes," said Rosalind, slipping out the door. She found Cagney at Hound's pen, rubbing Hound's ears and trying to get Batty to say hello to him. A minute before, Batty had been playing ballerinas with Hound, but now she was standing very still, being invisible. "Good morning," said Rosalind to Cagney. "Rosalind, right?" Rosalind nodded, pleased he had remembered. "Your little sister won't talk to me. She never does with new people. She waits until she's found a common interest." Cagney leaned over and whispered to Rosalind, "What about rabbits?" "She loves rabbits," Rosalind whispered back. "I have 2 living with me." "Oh, Batty, Cagney has 2 rabbits," said Rosalind. Batty's eyes grew big with wonder, and she forgot to be invisible. "Bring her over sometime to meet them," said Cagney. "I live in the carriage house next to Arendelle Hall." Rosalind suddenly felt as shy as Batty. She turned toward the truck and asked, "Where are you going to put the bush?" "Over there," he said, pointing, "in that sunny spot by the porch." "I'll get it for you." Rosalind jumped into the back bumper of the truck, wrapped her arms around the bush, and shrieked as a dozen thorns dug into her skin. Now, Rosalind had never cared about plants. She'd wanted to for her father's sake, but in her secret heart, a plant was just one more thing that needed feeding and coddling. Even so, she should have remembered that roses have thorns. She was the practical Pendrick, and practical people see though shouldn't go all silly and forget around handsome teenage boys. She knew what her friend Anna would say about it. "The cuter the boy, the mushier your brain." "I do that all the time. Hurts, doesn't it?" said Cagney. "It's not too bad." Cagney helped her off the back of the truck and then lifted the rose bush down himself. "You grab the shovel. We'll plant it together." While Rosalind tussled with the rose bush, Jane marched steadily along the driveway toward Arendelle Hall. "No sneaking through the hedge tunnel," Rosalind had said. "Jane must go the long way around and show herself honestly." "Good morning, Mrs. Tifton," she recited as she went. She was practicing one of the 2 speeches prepared at last night's moops. "I'm Jane Pendrick, daughter of Martin Pendrick, who is renting Arendelle Cottage. Please, may I speak with Jeffrey?" Jane hoped that she wouldn't meet Mrs. Tifton and then she wouldn't have to use his speech. Who knew what the boy Jeffrey had told his mother? She might already be disgusted with Pendrick's. Jane began the other speech. "Good morning, Jeffrey. I'm Jane Penderwick, officially elected spokesperson for Skye Penderwick, whom you met yesterday to your own sorrow." Whoops! Skye had sworn she'd kill Jane if she kept in the part about sorrow, but it sounded so romantic that Jane kept wanting to say it anyway. Jane followed the driveways that cut through the big hedge and curved through the formal gardens. There it was, Arundel Hall. She slowed, her steps nervously beginning the Jeffrey speech again. "Good morning, Jeffrey. I'm Jane Penderwick, elected spokesperson for Skye Penderwick, who you met yesterday to your, not anything. Skye asked me to express her regret at, oh nuts, what was the rest?" Jane was now close enough to the mansion to look up at the window where she had seen Jeffrey the day before. She had been hoping he would be there again, and she would wave to him, and maybe he would come down for her speech. But today the window was empty. She was going to have to knock on one of the mansion's doors. There had been much discussion at the Moops about which door to choose. The fancy carved oak door at the front had been rejected as the most likely to have Mrs. Tifton behind it. But that still left a lot of doors. The sisters had noticed at least 3 or 4, and that was just in the parts of the mansion they'd driven by. In the end, Rosalind had said that Jane should look for the simplest door she could find. With any luck, Mrs. Tifton wouldn't open a simple door. Jane circled the mansion, passing door after door, all too la-di-da for comfort, until all the way around at the back of Arundel Hall, she came to a plain green door with a shiny brass doorknob and a mat that said welcome. Jane said, "Sabrina Starr," surveyed the scene. She saw nothing dangerous. Could it be a trap? But who cares about danger when there's an assignment to carry out? She rang the doorbell. "Hold on." A woman's voice called from inside the house. Jane muttered under her breath, "Good morning, Mrs. Tifton. I'm Jane Penderwick, daughter of Arundel Cottage. Daughter of Martin." The door opened and a plump woman with short gray hair looked out at Jane. This couldn't be Mrs. Tifton, thought Jane. No one would ever call this woman snooty. Comfortable, that's what people would call her. What a relief, said Jane. For although Sabrina Starr had enough courage to face her adversaries, it was nicer when she didn't have to. And you are? Said the woman, who didn't look at all put out by Sabrina Starr. Jane decided on the spot to like her. Jane Penderwick, from the cottage Cagney told me your family had arrived. A professor and a lot of girls, he said. And hound. Oh, yes, the dog we're keeping secret from Mrs. Tifton. She doesn't like dogs. Let's just say that your hound doesn't sound like her type. By the way, I'm Mrs. Churchill, the housekeeper here, but everyone calls me Churchy. Would you like to come in? More than anything, Jane would have liked to go inside. There was some wonderful baking smell floating out the door, and probably Churchy would offer Jane whatever it was that smelled so good, and they could have a cozy chat about the Tiftons, and maybe Churchy would even give Jane a tour. But now was not the time for frivolity. Jane had a mission to accomplish. She said, "Thank you very much. Perhaps another time. I need to speak with Jeffrey. Is he here?" "Hang on," Churchy said, and disappeared back into the mansion. Jane had been concentrating too hard on memorizing speeches to have time to wonder what Jeffrey looked at like. Skye had said nothing about it, and Jane's own glimpse of him had been too brief and from too far away to get much of an idea. On the other hand, Jane knew exactly how Arthur, the boy in her new Sabrina Starr book, looked. He would have tawny eyes like a lion and dark auburn curls and a sad but noble expression brought on by his years of suffering. All who saw him would love him and sing praise to the goodness of his nature, such as, "Hello, said a boy's voice. Jane's eyes flew open. She had closed them to better picture Arthur. Right in front of her was a real boy to look at. He didn't have tawny eyes or auburn hair, but Jane all of a sudden understood that brown hair and green eyes could be nice. And if his face had too many freckles to be called noble, still, she already knew he wasn't the kind of boy to tell tales to his mother. "How's your head?" she asked. He leaned down a bit to give her a better view of the purple bruise on his forehead. "It's okay. Churchy put ice on it when I got home." "Good," Jane beamed, then pulled herself together. She still hadn't done her job. "I have a speech for you." Churchy came up behind Jeffrey. "Sure you don't want to come in, Jane?" "She has a speech," said Jeffrey. "Heavens," said Churchy. "You can listen if you'd like," offered Jane. "How could I pass it up?" Jane cleared her throat, stood tall with her hands clasped behind her back, and began. "Good morning, Jeffrey. I'm Jane Penderwick, officially elected spokesperson for Skye Penderwick, whom you met yesterday. Skye asked me to express her regret for crashing into you and for her subsequent rude behavior, and hopes you will forgive her and not take it too personally. The end." Jane bowed. Churchy applauded. "We don't get many speeches here. That was a good one. What do you think, Jeffrey?" "It was fine," he said. "I accept the apology." "Already?" said Jane. "I figured you'd need persuading, so I'd been thinking up more things to say, like how Skye's always saying exactly the wrong thing to people. It wasn't just special for you, and how she's really nice sometimes after you get to know her, and then I'd ask you to have pity on motherless girls brought up without a woman's gentle influence, which doesn't really count because our father is gentle. But I thought it sounded good. I have more, too, if none of that worked." "You can stop," said Jeffrey. "Not that it wasn't great." "Yes, very well put," said Churchy. "Thanks." Jane hadn't been so proud of herself since delivering the speech for the dedication of the new playground at Wildwood Elementary School. And in a minute, she was even prouder, for Jeffrey agreed to go back with her to the cottage for homemade chocolate chip cookies. She had done it. She had soothed the wounded pride of the former enemy and was about to deliver him to the Penderwick camp. Not even Rosalind could have done better. Jane said goodbye to Churchy, and the two children set off for a cottage, talking a mile a minute. For to Jane's delight, Jeffrey seemed to like to talk almost as much as she did. This gave her a chance to do some research for her book. She had been having trouble deciding what author would talk about, except imprisonment and doom, of course, and imprisonment and doom can only go so far. Jeffrey seemed willing to talk about anything. He told Jane about watching her family arrive from his window, but his mother had called him just as they were getting back into the car. That's why he had disappeared suddenly. And Jane told him about Hound throwing up in the driveway and how nice Cagney had been about it. And Jeffrey told her about how nice Cagney always was and about the stuff he was always doing for Jeffrey, like making a tunnel through the hedge so that Jeffrey could escape from visiting garden club ladies and giving him an iguana named Darwin. But Darwin made his mother break out in hives, so he'd had to give it to Churchy's married daughter in Boston. And Jane told him all about the other Penderwicks and what their names were, and how Rosalind was the prettiest, Skye was the smartest, and Batty the littlest. And Jeffrey told her that he was an only child, and it sometimes got lonely. And Jane said, "Well, you won't be lonely for the next 3 weeks, because we'll be here." And he said, "That'll be great." And Jane said that they should hurry, because the chocolate chip cookies must be almost done, and everyone would be so pleased to see him. Because Rosalind didn't come back in a few minutes like she had promised, Skye struggled on her own with the cookie preparation. She finished stirring the batter, tossed little blobs onto the cookie sheet, shoved the cookie sheet into the oven, and turned the knob to broil. Now there was nothing to do but wait and see if Jeffrey showed up. So she went upstairs to her neat white bedroom, pulled her math book out of the suitcase, and forgot all about the cookies. Which is how it happened that when smoke began to leak out of the oven, no one was there to notice. Mr. Penderick was where he had always been since breakfast, in his room reading about wildflowers. Jane and Jeffrey were still on their way to the cottage. Rosalind was outside with Cagney and the rosebush, and Batty and Hound were in his pen playing astronauts on the moon. Skye, she was working. A tree cast a shadow 20 feet long, and a girl who is 5 feet tall cast a shadow on 4 feet. What is the height of the tree? Okay, if the height of the tree is X, then X over 20 is, she scribbled enthusiastically in her math book, which means that X equals 100 divided by 4, or 25. Easy, no problem. I'm the champ. Next, 4 gallons of ice cream. On and on she went, solving problem after problem as more and more smoke poured out of the oven. Nothing broke her concentration, not even the faraway sound of Hound barking, "Danger, danger, danger!" It wasn't until she heard doors slamming and lots of running around downstairs that she looked up and sniffed. What was that smell? She ran down the steps into the kitchen. Skye was amazed at what she saw. Rosalind was pulling 2 smoldering black cookie sheets out of the oven. Cagney was dragging a hose into the kitchen from outside. Batty and Hound were tearing around the table playing fireman, and everywhere there was smoke, smoke, and more smoke. "What happened?" said Skye. "You ruined the cookies and almost burnt down the cottage. That's what happened," said Rosalind, coughing. "What made you turn on the broiler? What were you thinking?" Skye didn't know a broiler from a boiler from a rolling pin, but she was too mortified to admit it in front of Cagney. She put on her most stubborn face. "I wasn't thinking of anything." "Well, that much is obvious," said Rosalind. "I didn't know you were such a moron in the kitchen." Rosalind had gone too far. Skye knew it, and she knew that Rosalind knew it too by the look on her face. And Skye knew that Rosalind was about to apologize, but it was too late. Skye lost her temper. "You promised you'd come back inside and help me, and you didn't, so it's your fault as much as mine. Besides, these stupid cookies weren't my idea in the first place. They were yours and Jane's idea. I would never make cookies for a boy, especially a rich, stuck-up boy with a snooty mother." Suddenly, the kitchen was very quiet, and no one was looking at Skye. They were all looking the other way toward the door. Slowly, Skye turned her head and saw what she least wanted to see, Jane and Jeffrey staring in through the screen. And again, Jeffrey was so pale Skye could count his freckles. Oh, no! Skye wished that the cottage had burnt down and she was at the bottom of a pile of charred rubble. That's when Mr. Penderick wandered into the room. "Well, my goodness," he said cheerfully. "Have you had an accident? Good morning, Cagney. Quick work with the hose. And is this Jeffrey Tifton? Hello, son. I'm happy to meet you." I kind of like that dad. He's pretty cool. Love you, girls. Good night.